The John Anik and Kenny Florian Podcast.
Gangsters, what's up, guys?
John Anik, Kenny Florian.
Oh, my God!
Here are your hosts, John Anik and Kenny Florian.
Oh, yeah, man, am I excited. There is not a UFC show this weekend, right? I mean, do the fans agree? I mean, I love 40 shows a year, and I think maybe if I didn't work in the space, I would hate a Saturday night off. But we just ripped 8 consecutive weeks.
Like, yeah.
Little breather for the crew, for the fans. Time to reset here after a crazy first quarter, man.
And you can only store so much information, right? And for you, obviously, you're doing a lot of traveling and all the prep that you have to do for each and every show, man. It's a lot of work. So, yeah, I'm happy for you, man. You got a little break here.
See, I don't have your recall, and I don't say that to butter you up. You know, everybody thinks, man, dude, like, you love Kenny, man. Like, really love that guy. Like, ease up a little. But you and Rogan, you have these steel traps and the recall. And I say to Joe, man, how do you remember all these stuff? He's like, because I don't have all that NBA bullshit clouding up my brain, you know, all the other sports.
Right.
And I think there is something to be said for that.
Yes.
But aren't you glad you don't have to make picks today, right? I mean, you've had to make like 60 UFC picks all on Monday for the last 8 weeks. So we're giving you a little bit of a breather today. Of course, we're going to recap the hell of UFC 222. Much of today's show, though, is going to be our chance to pay tribute to our fallen friend and colleague, UFC producer Bruce Connell. As many of you know, passed away unexpectedly late last week. If you saw UFC 222, this is not news to you. Bruce produced every pay-per-view since UFC 17 in 1998, every big show. Kenny and I have known him for about 10 years. Kenny, I guess you would have probably met him formally when you did UFC 83 around 2008, which he would have produced, yeah?
Yes, absolutely.
So just an unfathomable loss and sudden, and nobody was prepared for it. And we talk all the time, of course, about this UFC second family, this UFC roadshow, and I'm on the road about 100 nights a year doing this thing, and you get very close with your colleagues. You know, we have broken bread dozens of times, and you just spend a lot of time together. He'd sort of become a father figure to me over the last several years because he produced almost every show that I did. He produced the first show you and I called together, Kenny, in Nashville in January of 2012. Amazing man, amazing sense of humor, great father, and I just can't believe this is our new world here, Monday, March 5, kid.
I know, man. And a lot of times, you know, we take things for granted. Not that we took Bruce for granted, but, you know, we forget that things are impermanent in this world. And for Bruce Connell, who was just always around the UFC, he was like the U in UFC. He was just like the Octagon. You just expect him to be there and be around. And the guy was such a master at his job. And then as far as being that friend or being that good guy who was always around and making you feel good, Bruce was that guy, man, amidst all the chaos that he had to deal with, producing a show and all that stuff. He was just that guy that was always smiling, always made you smile. Even when he was angry, he was such a sweet, gentle guy that you can only like kind of laugh. You're like, oh, look, that's cute. Bruce is angry.
Yeah.
You know, he was just – He was such a, like, there was a fragility to him. I don't want to say that. He was a solid guy, but he was this, you know, he was a skinny guy. So you felt like, I don't know, he was a fun guy to be around. And he was just, he had this amazing attitude where he was just always laughing about something and just a genuine guy who looked you in the eye and had real conversations with and just always asked about family and just one of the sweetest guys you'll ever meet, and that's why he's so beloved. And you know, I was really moved by that dedication. I actually was sent the video prior to the pay-per-view. Anthony Giordano, who we're gonna have on later, sent me the video, and I saw it on my phone and just started crying, man. And then I saw it again on the pay-per-view, started crying again. And you know, then seeing Rogan and what he said about Bruce Connell, it was just, it was a perfect example, of how beloved this guy was. And, you know, for you guys doing that show and always hearing him in your ear, it must've been extremely difficult.
It was. And I know I had your support during the week and I appreciated the texts and, you know, he was so proud of his kids, Tyler, who is a budding jiu-jitsu player, and Carly and Trevor. And you sort of touched on something. This live TV world is pretty chaotic, right? So there are going to be times where you get heated. And yet Bruce, he would always be the guy who would take the bullet and say, my fault. I can still hear him saying my fault, even when it was not at all on him, just to move things forward. And I do think there are two groups of people, you know, people who are willing to say, I'm sorry, whether it was your fault or not, and people who aren't willing to say that, you know. Mm-hmm. And I love my wife, but I say I'm sorry to her more than she says it to me. So I'll just throw that out there while we're talking about that. But, you know, I just – and Bruce loved you too, Kenny, right, obviously. And I think that made me a little bit emotional too, because, you know, he valued you tremendously as an analyst. And one of the last pictures he posted on Instagram was actually about a year and a half ago, last time you and I called fights together in South Dakota. And, you know, so I had a lot of conversations with him about you and, of course, about sports and everything else. And so last year, right around this time, we celebrated his birthday in Fortaleza, Brazil. And I have a video of us singing to him at a restaurant. He didn't really like it too much. So we're going to post that this Friday, because this Friday, March 9th, would have been Bruce's 62nd birthday. Unfortunately, the funeral, well, I guess for better or for worse, is going to be on his birthday this Friday. At least we'll be celebrating the man. So the service is going to be at the Trinity Episcopal Church in Hartford, Connecticut, 1 p.m. Eastern Friday. If you need more details, you can reach out to me on Twitter. I can provide them for you privately. The service, though, 1 p.m. this Friday, March 9th, at the Trinity Episcopal Church in Hartford, Connecticut. So Brian Stand is going to join us here in a few minutes, Kenny, but I do want to talk a little bit about UFC 222 here, and then inevitably throughout the show we're going to get back to the television giant that is Bruce Connell. So Chris Cyborg was the last fighter to make this walk in Las Vegas when we left T-Mobile Arena December 30th. First show in Vegas this year. She is the last fighter to walk again, and I thought she was dominant against Holly Holm. Some people thought that fight was maybe closer than I did. Nothing not dominant about what she did against Yana Kunitskaya. And when we sat down with Chris Cyborg on Thursday, you could tell that she didn't feel like Kunitskaya was on her level. But she is the last fighter in the world who is going to take any sort of challenge lightly or training lightly. And I think there's a little bit of a misconception that she forces the finish or is just guns blazing all the time. This is a patient, calculated, technical fighter. And I think scary that she is still getting better and still, you know, 31, 32 years old. Big weekend for the face of women's MMA, Chris Cyborg.
No doubt. You know, smart people learn from their mistakes. Smarter people learn from others' mistakes. And I think Cyborg has been around the sport for a very long time. And she's seen what has happened in this sport. Ronda Rousey, the biggest star in the world, got upset by Holly Holm. She knows how it goes, that it doesn't matter, you know, what people think of you or what you've done in this sport. That next fight is the most important thing ever. And when you're throwing these things around with 4-ounce gloves, anything can happen. Even to the point when Cyborg went and rocked Kunitskaya, Kunitskaya kind of like fell and like landed on her ankle and like took her down, you know, somehow. So, you know, things do go wrong. Cyborg stayed very calm. She destroyed her. I mean, right as soon as that round started, she just destroyed Kunitskaya. I thought it was going to be over in like 20 seconds. Kunitskaya did hit the takedown, to her credit, hung in there. And then as soon as Cyborg got right back up, it was just trouble. And that's where I think myself and a lot of people saw the danger here for Kunitskaya was on the feet. I mean, just her, the level is just – it's such a drastic difference in the level of their striking. It's one thing to be aggressive, but to be technical and to hit as hard as Cyborg, there's just not a whole lot of people who can do it. And even on the ground, I mean, Cyborg's pretty solid on the ground as well, man. It's going to be very difficult for Kunitskaya to land a submission on someone like Cyborg. So she was just always calm, got right back to her feet, and just made it look easy.
All right, we're going to be bouncing around a little bit today. Now joining us to share his thoughts, of course, on UFC 222 and the late Bruce Connell. Brian Stan is with us. But Brian, I know this hits you like a bag of rocks, man, when we spoke Friday morning.
You know, I think it hit us all. I think it's hard for the fans to understand how close you get on the road. What the UFC asks of its production crew is monumental. And for people like us, you know, we're 2 or 3 weekends a month we're on the road doing this. For Bruce Connell and his entire crew, it's been 2 decades, and they do all of them. And so, you know, Bruce was the guy who, you know, he mentored all of us he was that calming force for all of us after a show. If we had a horrible show, or if we said in a 7-hour broadcast, we said one thing that lit a fire under the UFC or anybody else, he always took the heat for us. He was always there waiting after that broadcast, waiting for say, hey, great show. Don't worry about this. I already told him you're doing fine. He was that guy. He was the glue that kept everybody together. And it's just, man, you just sometimes in life, there's certain people you don't expect to hear that news for. And I think we all in our minds right. expected Bruce Connell to be producing UFC shows yeah. for another 20 years. And to yeah. hear that news, I didn't know that he was sick initially and what had taken place in December.
Right.
You know, but we get really close when you're traveling on the road. And it's a challenging thing for all of us because that becomes your family. You know, yeah. it becomes your second family, that crew. I mean, you have dinners together. You celebrate birthdays together. I mean, you sent me the video of when we sang Bruce Happy Birthday in Fortaleza, Brazil, exactly a year prior.
Right.
And, man, I shed a few tears this weekend. And when Anthony Giordano, the director, sent me what that open was going to be, he sent it to me early, as I'm sure he sent it to you guys. I opened it up. I was at a cheerleading competition for my daughters with my wife and my mom, and I couldn't help it, man. Tears just yeah. started flowing. It was so well done. I really felt for you guys having to work that night. And I listened to the whole show and I thought you guys did him so proud because I know you were swallowing tears back at multiple times in that show and you guys did phenomenal.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. Every time you hit that talk back button, you're thinking about Bruce Connell. And of course, he's not there on the other end. And thankfully, they had that great audio of him counting us on the air that they were able to repurpose in a very powerful way. But, dude, like, since I got married in 2010, no joke, I've had dinner with you and Bruce Connell more than I've had dinner with my wife, right? So
yeah.
you get very close, and it is a huge loss. And legendary type TV producer, it's been nice to see a lot of the shout-outs out there. So a couple things on UFC 222 before we let you get back to the grind. How is the fucking grind, by the way? You look you look focused on a Monday, kid.
Dude, I am always focused on a Monday. Mondays are my busiest days. It is an absolute yeah. grind, but it's challenging, and I'm enjoying it. I'm learning every day. I've got a great growing team. You know, we're over 500 strong now, and we are starting to turn a corner in terms of success. But, you know, before I jump into the fights, I wanted to say yes. one thing, 'cause I think you two can help push this if you believe in it as well, but I would like to see the UFC do something further to recognize Bruce and his two decades yeah. of work in helping to build that product. I pushed something out on Twitter, which isn't a great platform, but I still think that when they do the next induction to the Hall of Fame, I think that Bruce should be inducted in some way, shape, or form. There should be something there cementing yeah. his legacy to the company, to this brand, to this sport, whether it be, you know, in the Performance Institute, wherever the UFC decides is going to house their Hall of Fame, he yeah. should be there. There should be something there that his family can go visit and that his future grandchildren can go visit and see, hey, this is his life's work. This is something he helped build because he did. Yeah. And yeah. and I'd like to see them do that for him, for everything he's done for that sport.
I agree, man. You know, as the guy who stood up there and hosted that thing the last few years, nothing would make me prouder than to see Bruce and Anthony, who will join us later today at some point, go into the Hall of Fame. April Alford, our great technical director, also yeah. said maybe you do a plaque in the truck, too. I mean, this is the guy, man. Like, and I think that's what we're all trying to emphasize here today, that this was the guy. Brian Ortega is the guy. How yeah. about T-City, Brian Stan? I mean, I know you called some of his early fights. He just knocked out Frankie Edgar this weekend, if I'm not mistaken, which is absolutely crazy.
I mean, I wondered, right, when he beat Cub Swanson, I was like, ooh, man, did Cub just dive into that, or is this kid for real? And I remember watching some of his early outside of the UFC fight footage, and I saw a kid who was really, really talented and understood how to use his long limbs and his reach. But, boy, has he evolved as a striker. It's hard to appreciate the timing on an elbow like that. I don't think people at home understand. When you train elbows and you hit pads, it's not the same as landing those strikes in sparring. And when you're talking about elbows and knees, you can't throw them the same in sparring that you do every other strike. Most people do not throw elbows in sparring because they don't have elbow pads on. If you wear actual elbow pads that protect your sparring partners, it actually weighs down your arms and it ruins your punching technique. So it takes thousands of repetitions to drill an elbow like that and time it on a guy as quick as Frankie Edgar, that was really impressive to me. And then how calm he stayed during the finish, because really, you know, Frankie Edgar was getting into a rhythm at that point. And what I was most impressed with Brian Ortega is he didn't allow that rhythm to throw off his game. He didn't panic. He didn't start getting a little defeated or start to question himself. He settled into the fight and he timed a perfect elbow. The one thing I'll say about him going forward in what's now going to be his matchup against Max Holloway and what I think is the next evolution in Brian Ortega's game is he stands very, very tall when he strikes. And when you keep a very, very high level like that, it makes it really challenging to fight guys who are really good with lateral movement like Max Holloway and switching stances. It also makes it challenging to get good leverage on certain things because the other guys have a lower center of gravity than you. And I think for Brian Ortega, if he stands that tall against Max Holloway, he's going to have a really challenging time to land efficient strikes against a guy with the movement Max Holloway has. He's almost going to be a little too still with that tall stance to deal with it, and he's certainly not going to be able to take him down if he stands that tall. He's really going to have to rely on clinching and grabbing the neck from standing positions or taking the back from a standing clinch somehow. And I think that Ortega's biggest advantage, not that Max is no slouch on the ground, but I think his biggest advantage in that fight is if he can get it to the ground. But it's going to be a real challenge to do from that tall a stance.
Yeah, and Holloway is taller and just as big as Ortega physically. So I'm really interested to see what happens. Who do you think wins that fight now? Is it going to be the composure of Ortega? Because for me, I feel like that's his greatest gift. He certainly has the ground advantage. Can he take him out on the feet, though?
Boy, I mean, look, Ortega's shown us that he can finish. He finds a way to finish fights. But I still give an edge to Max Holloway. I think it's easy to jump on the train, and this isn't taking anything against Brian Ortega, but it's easy to jump on the train of who just did something devastating, and he's had a hell of a run, right? Finishing Clay Guida, Cub Swanson, and now Frankie Edgar, that's an incredible run. But Max Holloway was the best fighter last year, and he fought about as good as you can fight in that weight division. And his confidence is through the roof. So I still think it's his fight to lose. I think his movement, his diversity in striking, the power he brings in that weight class, his ability to defend takedowns and dictate where the fight goes, I think all of that allows him to win that fight. And look, it could be a fight that he wins 3 or 4 rounds to 1 if it goes a decision. I think that Max Holloway is just that good. He's got more years invested in being a whole, complete fighter now. Mm-hmm. Than Brian Ortega does. I still think that Brian Ortega's, he's still going to continue to improve. I think Brian Ortega has 2 more years of steady improvement before we see the final result. But they're going to push him into a title shot now because he's just been so successful. So, you know, similar to like Max Holloway lost to Conor McGregor several years ago, and it wasn't the same Max Holloway we see now. I think that Brian Ortega and Max Holloway, I give Max Holloway an edge, but the Brian Ortega he fights now is not the same one he's going to fight a year or two from now.
Very interesting. I guess you got to spin it forward, though, right? You knock out Frankie Edgar. There's really nothing else to do. You're not going to fight Jose Aldo, you know.
He deserves it. He deserves it. And look, you know, we didn't expect that from Brian Ortega this time. Who knows what you see out of him next time? You know, we only can evaluate what we see on tape. It's totally different when you're Camp Brian Ortega and you see what the kid's capable of every day in the gym. There's always things that analysts don't see on fight day that these guys are still capable of, which makes this sport great, right? I mean, if we were able to call it every single time and be right, it wouldn't be any fun.
Yeah, ain't that the truth. All right, buddy, we'll let you get back to it. Thank you for breaking away for us, and thanks for supporting the entire broadcast team this weekend with your texts and your tweets. I know it means a lot to the Connell family when they see people like you and Kenny broken up as they are about this. So thank you for the time, and I'm getting the resume in for the Fort Lauderdale office, buddy. So, you know, I'm just letting you know if you got a slot for me, man. You don't have to give me any great salary. Just get me in the door.
Make him a secretary or something, bro.
I got the guy who runs that office in entire South Florida for us in my office right now. I'll let him know.
I think John would be a great assistant, Brian, personally. Great secretary.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Perfect.
Yeah.
All right, buddy. Have a good week.
Always
thank
a
you,
pleasure,
man.
Guys. Thank you.
See you, Brian.
I mean, would I not make a great executive assistant, Ken?
I think so, dude. You're organized, you know?
Dude, stick me on the desk out front, may Rocky Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu.
I will. Have you sell some memberships. Yeah, it'll be good.
Sell whatever you need, kid, whatever you need. All right, support for the Anik and Florian podcast comes from our friends at Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. They understand that home plays a big role in your life and family. That's why they created Rocket Mortgage. Rocket Mortgage gives you the confidence you need when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. It's simple, allowing you to fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. Whether you're looking to buy your first home or your 10th, with Rocket Mortgage, you get a transparent online process that gives you the confidence to make an informed decision. It's convenient. Our trusted partners allow you to share your financial information with Rocket Mortgage at the touch of a button. And in addition to getting a real mortgage approval in minutes, you can even adjust the rate and length of your loan in real time to make sure you're getting the right solution for you. Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/ANIK. rocketmortgage.com/ANIK. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumeraccess.org, number 3030.
Now time for the Ray Longo Minute.
I want you to punch a hole in his fucking chest. That's what I want.
The Ray Longo Minute. Starring Ray Longo. The John Anik and Kenny Florian Podcast.
All right, breaking news on the Anik and Florian Podcast. We have answered the fans' demands. We have moved Ray Longo to the top of the show for the future, I guess. I mean, if this 1 p.m. Eastern slot works for you, Ray, no more burying you at the bottom of the show. So good to see you, man.
Thanks a lot.
So
we should have
held them to the end to get the viewers, you know, to tune in for that. That's what I thought the plan
was. Right.
You know what I mean? But we're getting hate tweets. You know, I want to see Longo right away. It's ridiculous, Ray. What have you done? You
the
got a cult.
Speak. The huh? viewers have spoken. The
I know.
Viewers have spoken. We have to deliver. Huh? And here we are.
Exactly.
Where do we start today?
Well, so I wasn't going to give you this plug necessarily, but I think we owe it to our listeners. Ken Flo, Ray Longo has his own podcast now.
See?
So I figured we should start there, Ray. How is your new podcast, Ray?
Well, it's not, it's really it's the continuation of Training Day with Ray. So it's really not new.
Wow.
What's the wow with that? We took
what?
A different.
I feel betrayed.
No, definitely not. Definitely not.
At least tell me if you're going to cheat on me. I mean.
No, it's definitely same people involved with Training Day with Ray. And that thing went in the toilet. Now we're waiting for this one to go in the toilet. So it's only a matter of time. I think why announce it when it might be dead in 3 weeks?
There you go. I get it. Well, I just want the listeners to know there's more Longo content out there. So if you just Google the guy's name, you can find it. So here's where we're going to start, Ken Flo. This is what Ray Longo texted me during the broadcast. Yeah. Ray was under the impression from Big John that the horn doesn't necessarily mean anything and that the fighters are, you know, should keep fighting until the ref stops them. You referenced the Holly Holm, Jermaine Durandamy fight.
Exactly.
Hector Lombard, in theory, in your opinion, was following that advice. You know, kangaroo fucking court, he said. And you also said Joe Rogan was right. Why was Herb Dean whispering? And I know, you know, you've said, too, that these guys don't necessarily want to be the bad guy. We were going to get into Lombard and CB Dalloway, and obviously that is where you stand on it.
Yeah, I mean, look. Why was the guy disqualified? The guy absolutely did nothing wrong. The ref didn't stop him, and it's protect yourself at all times. That bell is just a warning for the ref to jump in. And if that's the case, why wasn't Durandamy didn't even get a point deducted?
Right.
Zero. So Holly Holm technically could be the champ right now. That's a DQ. Right? Why was Lombard DQ'd in that fight? He did nothing wrong.
So you think
according to the rules?
Right. So for you, you're like it should be a no contest, not a disqualification, because Dalloway couldn't continue.
Right.
Look, my point is that they made the right decision. I'm just saying, what was the difference between that and what Durandamy did to Holly Holm? That's
right.
My question.
Just referee discretion, right? And unfortunately, in all the research I've done, actually. After our show last Monday, one thing that I found out, Ray, is that every rule has an exception, and a lot of these things are open to interpretation. And I know it's not what fighters and coaches and broadcasters want to hear, but the gray area in mixed martial arts officiating has never been more gray.
I mean, I don't get it. If you're Hector Lombard, are you not confused? Are you not confused at that point? Like, according to the Holly Holm fight, I'm going to keep fighting until they step in and break me. What exactly did he do wrong, and what was the ref's, what was his take on it? Like
the only thing, The only thing, Ray, is that I think during the fight, as soon as that bell rang, the referee said, "Round's over," didn't he? I think he stepped in
and
put
his
arm.
Stop! But he didn't jump in and stop him.
Gotcha.
They're saying, like in the Holly Holm fight, the same thing happened, and she still threw a punch.
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
That's where
and
it's just. I think
it's not consistent.
A little crazy.
It's not consistent.
Right, and it's all in an instant, in a split second. But Ray,
exactly.
With you here, I just want to ask Kenny and you, and we'll start with Kenny. What does that 10 count, Kenny? When you hear that horn, what does that signify to you?
Yeah, I mean, you don't always hear it. That's the thing. Sometimes you're super focused, the crowd's loud, whatever. But when you hear it, and you do hear it sometimes during the fight, the round's about to be over. 10 seconds, right?
But as a fighter, you want to finish that round strong.
That's what I'm saying. No, absolutely.
See,
and you just got kicked. And you're thinking about the counter, and that's
exactly.
it. You know what I mean? And you're in the middle of a combination.
You're going for it, man. Like, even in sparring, I would say short time. You got to win that round. You got 10 seconds to put an exclamation point on it.
Yes,
and the ref's
responsibility,
when he hears those clappers, he gets in position to do his job and to jump in there. Not to say stop from across the ring.
Yeah.
Well, right. And we see a lot of takedowns late in rounds as fighters try to punctuate the round, right? So I think most fighters, when they hear that, you go balls to the wall and you try to punctuate the round.
I want to know what the difference between the home fight and that fight was. That's all I'm asking for.
I don't disagree with you, and perhaps we didn't do as right by Hector Lombard as we could have on the broadcast, you know. Obviously, I think we all agree that CB Dolloway was in no position to continue.
No,
right.
But
if I'm the commissioner, if it's my rules, it's a DQ. I think the bell means stop, period. Not the ref jumping in, because you can't count on that. But, I mean, I would say that if everybody tried to follow that rule, we have a better place. But when you're told not to stop until the ref jumps on you, then you got a problem. Again, why would you want to exploit that rule? I'm going to keep going until the guy separates us.
Like for the Holm and Durandamy fight, did they even take a point away?
No, nothing.
They didn't even take, and she did it twice, right?
And that poor girl had to come out and fight, and that shot was hard, man.
Right.
Hard.
So for you, Ray, it's more you're more upset that there's no consistency, not necessarily that this happened. Gotcha.
Definitely the consistency, and I think, look, man. Here's the other thing: who's your favorite umpire in baseball, Kenny?
I don't watch enough. I don't watch any of it. But
your favorite ref, and who's your favorite ref in football?
Right.
Your favorite.
I get where you're going.
I don't know. I don't know any of them. I don't know any.
You know nothing.
Yeah.
You know why?
Because it's not about
that's the way it should be.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Who's your favorite tennis guy, the line judge?
Right, right.
You have one? You ever see him and McEnroe go at it back in the day? These guys are celebrities.
Right,
they
right.
don't want to be the bad guy.
Yeah.
They don't
want
to make the hard decisions. Right. They want to take pictures and smooze with everybody. There's
a
problem.
The ones that aren't celebrities, though, I will say, like Keith Peterson, and he could be because y'all know I love him. Right, he's not acknowledging cameras, right? And he's the best referee in the business.
Yeah, there's a lot of guys, too, now, coming up. I'm just saying, like, you don't even know these other guys. Or even, like, I just go back to, like, you're almost, as a ref, should be arguing with people because you're making the calls that are not popular, but you're adhering to the rules.
Yeah.
Kempel,
you got anything else
for... Joe Rogan was right. We want to know what the rules are. What are we whispering for? It's our little secret. So nobody knows what the rules are. Everybody's in the dark. It should be, I think, a little transparency.
Right, and also you get the chance to discuss with another referee whether you're going to take away a point, 2 points, DQ, contest. You know what I mean? He should know in his head already what happened and what he's going to do. Period.
Why was there no consultation with the Stevens fight with Emmett? How come nobody got consulted on that?
It's tricky, man.
Can you guys get on board, please?
I'm with you.
I don't like it.
I feel like Longo's screaming at me through his TV at times. I do think, though, But I do think your vision, though, would you at least agree with me that it's ambitious, Ray, to think that we can get as consistent as you'd like us to be, right? I mean, yes, you can inject more, you know, Jason Herzog's and Kevin McDonald's and Mark Goddard's.
Right.
But
Herzog's
I just don't know that we're ever going to get to a point. And even, too, the whole process of, like, the referee going to the other referees and going to the commission tables. Yeah. It's like, dude, it's just a bunch of gray area shit. I'm telling you. And I know I'm not telling you anything you don't know, but every fight's different.
Yeah, even with the Musasi fight, the commissioner stopped by the gym. He told me there's no instant replay in New York, yet they went to the instant replay.
Right.
Is there any accountability for it? This isn't, I'm not even joking. Like, I'm just saying, as a guy trying to follow what's going on, I have no fucking idea what's going on. How do you not have a set of rules that everybody, look, the ref didn't stop him. The guy kept fighting. The guy's not DQ'd. He didn't do anything wrong. You know, if the guy can't continue, like maybe in a groin shot, it's a no contest.
No, there needs to be consistency, Ray. There absolutely needs to be consistency.
I want to preface this too, Kenny. I understand it's a tough job. Yeah. And I might be coming off as a prick a little bit, but I'm just saying I think they could do a couple of things just to be consistent where everybody's on the same page, where it takes out these conversations.
Right. No, like in the NFL, you're like, oh, you know, when he makes a catch, 2 feet have to be on the inside or have to be scraping the floor or whatever it is. There's no, maybe it's one, maybe it's two, you know, changes Sunday to Sunday. Huh. It's ridiculous. There needs to be some kind of consistency amongst all the referees. As a fighter going in, that's one more thing you got to worry about. A referee, judging, you know, it's ridiculous. How many guys do you have to fight out there?
The other thing, Kenny, is, and I believe like what Jeremy Stevens said, he didn't think he did anything wrong. He thought he was doing everything right. You have to believe that guy based on what we're even saying.
Yeah.
That we don't even know what it is.
Right. See, this was the whole vision for the Ray Longo Minute, too, was to have an issue like this to get the most passionate guy in the space. So, all right, I don't know if you have anything else, but before we let you go, I'll just say, you know, we can give you your own time slot. We gave you your own minute. Like, I don't know if you want naming rights on the top of the show. We'll make it the Anik Longo the Longo Florian and Anik show.
I told you what was going to happen years ago. Somebody's going to show up at Kenny's doorstep and tell him that I'm his new partner. This is the way this thing is headed. He's coming down the pipe. You see it. There's going to be a knock on the door, probably around 2 in the morning, and they're going to drag him out of his house.
Yeah.
Hey, listen. All right.
That's hilarious.
I just poured my heart out. You want more?
That was great. Imagine the poor bastard has to hit pads with Longo next. I mean, Longo's going to kill the guy. He's going to be dead in like 20 minutes.
We got that going, too. Everybody's doing good on that note.
Good.
Hey, can you give me 30 seconds on Brian Ortega, because Frankie Edgar got knocked out this weekend, and I'd be remiss to not at least get your 2 cents.
I got to tell you something, man. If I tell you that my heart broke during that fight, because Frankie's such a good guy. Mark's a great guy. Frankie, I really believe you can make a case for, is the best fighter that ever walked through the octagon door. I mean, this kid is just an inspiration for everybody. Takes fights. He's not backing away. He fought everybody. Yep. 2 divisions. Could have dropped down to 35 probably. Was a champ at 55. And at 145, he looked tiny in there. Yeah. And he was the champ at 55. So I got nothing but, I think that kid's an inspiration for anybody who's maybe a little undersized, or, you know, people are telling him, you're too small for this, you're too small for that. That kid is amazing. And he got lifted off his feet with that uppercut, and he still wanted to fight.
Yeah,
right. I mean, I don't know. What do you say about the guy? And, again, he took a fight on short notice. And, again, they're both great guys. Brian Ortega's a sweetheart. And, man, the ceiling is so high for this kid. That was a big challenge. Like, to me, I picked Frankie Edgar to win the fight. Again, he's getting a little older. I didn't know, like, if that's going to eventually rear its ugly head. Maybe that was the first sign of it. But Ortega really looked like he, you know, from the second that bell rang, he looked like he belonged in there. And I didn't know if it was going to be another Yair Rodriguez where he was just going to take him down and beat the crap out of him. And I think that question was answered. So, man, I mean, who doesn't want to see a fight between Holloway and Brian Ortega? I think that is just a phenomenal matchup at this point. That's an exciting fight that everybody should want to see. And again, whatever Frankie decides to do in the future, again, there's a guy who, come on, look at those stats. How do you last that long in the octagon? I mean, I deal with guys getting injured every day. I don't know how this kid did it. You know, amazing. He was fighting through injuries along the way. Nobody gets out of this game scot-free. just one of the toughest, most inspirational fighters the UFC has ever seen. And, you know, I just wish the kid the best of luck, you know, to meet him. And I know you guys have is to love him. And, man, I don't know. I mean, just, it was great. You know, it was great on all accounts, you know. You know, like, again, Frankie should get the props he really deserves. And Ortega's an up-and-comer. And what a great fight he fought, man. So hats off to him, too.
Yeah. All right, buddy. Thanks for the extended time. We will talk to you. It's actually next Wednesday. So 8 days from now will be. Yeah, we got a little bit of a conflict early next week. So March 14th, it'll have to be. Give you time to get a haircut, shut the dogs down for a few minutes, and we'll be good to go.
Wait a minute. Let me ask you something. I did the podcast last night. We had Aljamain Sterling on.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
He brings up this thing where you said, what do I have to do? I have lettuce growing out of my head. What is that?
Yeah, it's your hair. It's lettuce, you know. That's what we call it. That's what we call it in Boston. What's the problem?
The lettuce.
Oh, I have no idea. I didn't know what he was talking about.
Yeah.
He couldn't stop laughing last night.
Well, nice job getting the C-listers with Aljo on the podcast, okay? Nicely done. We'll talk to you next week, buddy, all right?
All right, take it easy, man. I'll see you.
See you, Ray.
All right, we'll see.
Bye.
So Brian Ortega might just be the best human being in MMA, right? Yeah. I mean, I love that kid. And to see him do that to Frankie Edgar, I think, was shocking to a lot of people, Kenny. And the anticipation for Ortega Holloway, right? You heard Brian Stan maybe doesn't necessarily think he has all the tools right now to handle that challenge. But a lot of people are going to say that this is the most anticipated featherweight fight since Aldo and Florian. No, I mean, since Aldo and McGregor, as much as, you know, for me, this is
almost exactly like Aldo Florian. Yeah.
I mean, this fight between Ortega and Holloway is going to be very highly anticipated, and maybe we'll get back to it later in the show. But I just want to ask you about Frankie Edgar's approach in this fight, because we got a chance to talk to both fighters before the fight, obviously, and you know, not that T-City was going to pull guard necessarily, but he's not at all afraid to be taken down and fight off of his back. So was Frankie Edgar's approach going to be takedown attempt averse? Was he not going to go for take, right? I mean, I know the fight only lasted almost a round,
right,
but zero takedown attempts. It looked like Frankie was going to try to outstrike
him. Well, Frankie was in a guillotine at one point. I think it was off a failed shot. Am I mistaken? Was Frankie shooting in on that? Or
quite
maybe
possibly.
We're in the clinch? I think he was shooting in once, but I think so. I think you got to mix in everything. You know, as far as Ortega, yes, is his jiu-jitsu sharp? No doubt about it. If you hit a good, solid double leg with good posture, you're not going to be able to get a guillotine if you do it right. And Frankie certainly has way more experience than me to be able to pull that off. So I thought, you got to mix it in. At the very least, John, I would say, at the end of the round, to maybe just put a stamp on the round and, you know, hit a couple takedowns, you know, if it was relatively even on the feet. I thought Frankie, like Brian said, I thought he was getting into a rhythm. I thought Frankie was winning that fight up until that point. It wasn't a blowout. It was close. But Frankie was landing a little bit more shots. But the thing about Brian Ortega, what makes him so great, first of all, this is a different Brian Ortega, right? He gets better with every fight. Not to mention, he was notorious as a slow starter, okay? He was a very slow starter, something that I had to deal with. And he's been making those adjustments every fight. It seems like he knows when to turn the volume back and get his rhythm a lot quicker. What separates Ortega from a lot of fighters is, listen, I think there's other guys who have sharp ground games, all right, better ground games than Ortega. There's other guys that have better striking than Ortega. There's guys that are bigger, stronger, more athletic than Ortega. What makes Ortega great is his mind. Okay, it's his composure. It's his ability to read his opponent and say, you know what? I see how Frankie's entering. I'm going to throw an elbow. Yeah. I'm going to go for a guillotine. Cub keeps ducking his head. I'm going to combo with some knees and wrap up that guillotine. You know, whatever it is, he knows how to figure guys out, and he's doing it better and better every single fight, quicker and quicker every single fight. So to me, that's what makes him special. And yeah, like Brian said, you know, does he have more to improve on? Absolutely. I've been saying that the last couple of fights. I said, Ortega's good, but I don't know if he's got the kind of striking level of a Cub Swanson. I don't know if he can keep Cub away. I don't know. Frankie has a lot more experience than him. I think Frankie's going to be able to land some shots, and he knows how to win rounds. I don't know if Ortega's going to be able to Frankie. He keeps proving us all wrong. You know, so I was blown away by Ortega's performance, his ability to find that winning shot or that winning move to get the win. He's been doing it throughout his career. This guy is a finisher. You have to make this fight. You just got to do it. You look at all the momentum and the highlights from both of these guys of what you can do and how they are similar as far as size and all that stuff and age. It's the fight that has to happen, man. This is a big, big fight, and it's happening in the featherweight division.
And we're not done on T-City, but now with us on the guest line, and I apologize for keeping a good man waiting. This is a man who spent more time with the late Bruce Connell, I would think, over the last 15 to 20 years than probably anyone in the world. Also the best sports TV director, by the way, in the free world. The great Anthony Giordano is with us. AG, you know we love you, man. I apologize it took these circumstances to actually get you on the show. How's it going out there in Northern California, my man?
You know, just in denial. It's the best way I can put it, in denial.
I can't imagine how difficult the last several days, you know, have been for you and the emotions. When you took that seat for UFC 222 without your guy Brucey to your left, I mean, did your heart skip a beat? I mean, what was it like cracking that pay-per-view broadcast this weekend for you?
Well, obviously that emotional opening, you know, when Craig showed it to us, Craig Borsari, the day before, I looked at him and I said, really? You know, you're going to do that and then expect us to put on, you know, 6 hours of live television, you know, with everybody in tears. But that's what Bruce would have wanted. And that's what he taught us all. So that's what we did. And it's certainly a partnership. You know, Karen, his loving wife, used to call me his road wife, that I spent more time with him, you know, in the last years, probably at least 15 years. I think I started at UFC 28, and he was the producer then. So I've been next to him every other week or every couple of weeks for, you know, from that point till, you know, a couple of weeks ago. And it definitely felt surreal. You know, it's like a quarterback and a receiver, you know, there's timing, there's, you know, you kind of just, you know what he's thinking, you know, what he knows what you're thinking. So again, you know, Michael LaPlante did a fine job and a capable job. And I thought he was, you know, really nice when he just kind of leaned over to me, whispered in my ear, hey, this is always Bruce's chair. It'll always be Bruce's chair. So at that point, you just suck it up and you go to work.
Anthony, you knew Bruce better than everybody. You know, can you just explain to people what kind of guy Bruce was? And you know, again, you're another one of those guys that you just expect to be there. You guys were like salt and pepper. You were always close to each other, always around. Just talk to people about what Bruce was, what he meant to you.
Well, you know, the strange thing for me is, you know, Bruce was like, he's been on the road so long, and he's been in sports television like way beyond me. I mean, he's one of the pioneers.
Right.
So he's like, his like Marriott number was like, you know, 10 zeros and like number 90, you know, he loved, you know, he always did our hotels. He was crazy about, you know, very, again, a producer, right? The details, specific things. And he would just arrange everything. And, you know, this week, the strange thing for me was, you know, we always stayed at kind of our own hotel so he could do his work and not be bothered by it, you know, by everything. Right. And so this week I was kind of by myself, you know, at the Four Seasons at in Vegas. And it was, I kept expecting him to walk through the door. You know, he would bug me, you know, he always worked out, you know, at least one or two times a day. You know, ate well and, you know, always called me and, you know, trying to get me to come to the gym. And I was waiting for the phone to ring. And, you know, in Bruce fashion, he always would say, you know, I'm at the gym and you're not, you know, and try to try to rally me out of bed, you know, to come down and stay healthy. Because, you know, he cares about people, you know, whether it's, you know, John or Joe or you. He always had kind words always to say about you guys. You know that he loved you guys. And he, you know, gave people like April, our AD, her first chance and her job, and Jackie. And, you know, he's super loyal to, you know, to his team. you know, a really, really loyal guy that would go up against, you know, everybody, whether it was, you know, Zuffa or whatever. Right. He would go up against them and battle for his guys and fight for his guys always.
You couldn't have summed it up any better. I'm starting to think we need to find a weekly spot for you on this podcast. I know you set a place for him at Charlie's at the Four Seasons after the pay-per-view, which I thought was just so touching. And we're going to, of course, mourn and celebrate Bruce's life later this week in Connecticut. But I wish we could bottle the energy of your back-and-forth relationship with him, because you guys are both hilarious. You're maybe a little bit funnier than he is, but you're both funny guys. You both talk a bunch of shit. And, like, he still owes you 10 grand, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Well, 10,200 if we're counting on the 200 from bocce ball, from Marin's, you know, from Marin's bocce ball, where I specifically showed him the rules, right, on the internet, that what I did was legal. But, you know, when Bruce gets, you know, when he gets hooked on something, yeah, there is zero talking to him about it. I'm like, Bruce, it's right here in the rules. He's like, well, let's play double or nothing. I'm like, I know you, right? I know you're not going to pay me, so give me the 200, and then I'll play you the double or nothing, or I'm never going to play you again. And I don't know if you've seen the picture. Have you seen the picture the tape guys made with Bruce, you know, with the rake? Have you seen that picture?
No.
Oh, Jesus. I'll text you this picture.
Please do.
Marin had some sort of rake, you know, in his backyard. It wasn't a bocce ball court. It was just grass. It was bumpy. It was, like, ridiculous. It was not bocce ball. It was just throwing these bocce balls around in this, like, crater-filled yard. But for some reason, Marin's back of his rake was sharpened and, like, whittled to, like, a point.
Oh, boy.
So, you know, so Bruce was, like, tossing that at the opposing team, which I was not. So while you're trying to throw the ball, all of a sudden, like, this spear was coming. You know, so he was, you know, the thing about Bruce is he loved life. Yeah. You know, and we would get into, you heard it, you would hear it over the thing. We'd get into some battles where, you know, it's just instantly we would be yelling at each other, and, like, especially if we were in a different place, you know, yeah, where our home guys didn't know us. They would look at, like, Nick Villani, one of our camera guys, he would say the camera guys would look at each other, and then 2 seconds later, we're just right back, everything's good. And we're just, you know, but we're both very passionate about what we do. So we would get into these things. And then literally the second it was over and we were back. And he always, you know, whether we were in Brazil, whether we were in anywhere in the U.S., just always wanted to do things. And the one thing that, you know, people say, but really as a father, you know, I only have one daughter. So we're just, you know, she's about to go to college. We're ready to lose our minds. I watched Bruce's family, his kids and his wife, they always wanted to be together. You know, they would come out Memorial Day weekend. They would all fly out to Vegas and go on this houseboat and, you know, stay on this houseboat for like 2 weeks or something. And yeah, Bruce would always tell me, oh, you know, we ate 30 pounds of steak and drank, you know, 50 cases of beer. But I love the fact that his kids, if they were anywhere in the vicinity, they would make, you know, the effort,
right,
and all come together and hang together. And I always told him, I'm like, dude, you're a crazy dude, but you're a great dad, great husband. And I just hope my daughter, you know, when she's, you know, in her third year in college, you know, just wants to fly everywhere and meet me and do that. I mean, it really was a tribute to him as a person, because ultimately, right, we all miss him.
Right.
We all love him. We've all learned in our business and in other businesses, the show goes on. Right, whether I'm there, you there, you know, the next person will just continue. Will the home viewer know that I'm not directing the show, or, you know, right, that, I mean, no one's going to know what that particular thing is. But what really gets me and brings it home and makes it real is the people, you know, in that room when he passed, you know, where they're going to, unfortunately, I had a niece pass away last year. She was only 20 years old. And I learned, you know, that the hole in the heart that the family gets that just stays there for the rest of their lives. They feel that pain, you know, I mean, they move on with their lives, but it's always there. That's what ultimately matters, right? And that's what really mattered to Bruce. And to me, you know, a great producer, you know, awesome and all that, and ESPN and everything. But for me, as a father of a, you know, one child, an only child, the biggest tribute that I can say to Bruce, he was a great husband and, you know, one of the best fathers that I've ever met.
Yeah, kids wanted to be around him. And I think as a parent, that's probably goal number one for a lot of us. And if your daughter doesn't want to hang out with you, I don't know. Her friends must be really fun, because I say that with all due respect. I mean, you know how much we love you and breaking bread with you and everything else. I mean, she's got to like hanging out with you. If not, she's nuts.
Yeah, she does. And little things like this morning, she was running a little late. So, you know, hard to find parking space at school. And I'm dead asleep. And she shakes me. He's like, "Dad, would you drive me to school?" You know, some people be like, "Well, you get up early." I'm like, "Yeah, absolutely." So the little phone call, the little conversation we had on the 10-minute ride to school, you know, especially when you travel, you know, and I missed her senior day at soccer. I missed her senior soccer banquet. I missed her actual birthday party because I was doing the show. People don't realize, when I think it was somebody's girlfriend they met, and they're like, "Oh, yeah, my boyfriend, you know, works for ABC Sports, or is going to do the Super Bowl." And I said to her, "Well, you understand what that, here's what that means in real language. You're going to be alone every weekend."
Yeah.
Every wedding you go to, everything, you will be by yourself.
Right.
So it's a little, that people don't understand the sacrifice that you make, you know, giving up your time with your family. And Bruce has done it, you know, for so long, and to be able to keep that closeness. And just, you know, the funny thing is the 10,000 that he owes me, just to clarify that.
Yeah, please.
He kept telling me that my daughter is in high school and she absolutely will get a piercing and tattoos before she was 18. and I said, that's never, ever going to happen. Not because I'm going to yell at her or anything. First of all, my daughter's afraid of needles more than anything in the world. And both of those involve needles. So he said, "I'll bet you $5,000. And I said, "Listen, if we make this bet, you're going to pay me. Like, this is a real bet. Like, I'm going to make you put money in, like, escrow or something. You're going to..." So I call my wife. I tell my wife about the bet. My wife's like, "$5,000, make it $10,000. So I told my wife, I said, "Hey," I told Bruce, I said, "My wife said, make it $10,000. So he's like, done. So literally my daughter's 18th birthday was last Saturday. Right? And I go, "Bruce, in the end, he still screwed me." Like, somehow, he didn't have to go to this extent. But I knew somehow I wasn't going to get that money.
Unbelievable. And a fitting way to close it out. UFC Director Anthony Giordano, thank you for hopping on with us, man. Hope I didn't wake you after you went back to bed after dropping your daughter at school, of course. And I look forward to seeing you and celebrating Brucey's life later this week, my man. Thank you so much.
Thanks, guys. Thanks, Kenny, for your kind words the other day as well.
Thank you, buddy.
All right, boys.
All right, there he is, the great AG. A lot of online tributes out there for Bruce Connell. If you search on Twitter, MMAJunkie.com, John Morgan did a really nice article and put that all together, and I appreciate that very much. But a lot of names you'd recognize: Ken Flo, Dick Vitale, and Barry Melrose, Darren Pang, a couple of NHL giants. The Connell family, pretty legendary when it comes to sports TV. Bruce's late father, Scotty Connell, absolute legend. He's in the Sports Broadcasting Hall of Fame, or some Hall of Fame. He is most definitely a Hall of Famer. And to Brian Stan's point earlier in the show, hopefully Bruce Connell is a Hall of Famer a few months from now. But an amazing legacy, just sort of to put a bow on that. And you can be sure, you know, every single time that we do these pay-per-views in particular and big Fox shows, you know, these are all for Brucey. And we're thinking about Brucey. And, you know, we'll put this man on the credits as long as we can until it's not appropriate anymore, right? I mean, this was the guy. And as such, we wanted to spend a lot of time on the great Brucey Connell here today. We are going to get back to the UFC 222 recap here in a minute. First, though, give me about 60 seconds to tell you about Mattress Firm, if you would. Everyone knows how important stretching is before an event. Well, so does Mattress Firm, except it's your dollar. Your budget stretches further when you're shopping at America's Neighborhood Mattress Store. It's a true home run, and you'll have a ball. They're the head coaches when it comes to mattress expertise, but know this, they are more than mattress experts. They have a game plan that helps you transform your mattress into a bed. From adjustable bases and sheets to the headboards and bedroom decor, they have you literally and figuratively covered up like your favorite cornerback. So go to mattressfirm.com/podcast to see what deals are happening as I read this sentence to you. They even offer you a 120-night sleep trial to ensure perfection and a 120-night low-price guarantee so you know you paid the perfect price. Talk about a 1-2 punch, a knockout if you will. So score big with a perfect bed. Head to mattressfirm.com/podcast. Head to mattressfirm.com/podcast to get the play-by-play on how you can monumentally improve your sleep today, tonight, and tomorrow. I just wanted to get a few thoughts out there on Ortega, and then we'll rifle through some of the other winners here, Ken Flo, from UFC 222. But just on Brian Ortega, you summed it up perfectly, and I'm so glad that you did. But I do think it would have been fascinating had this fight gone on, because I do think that this wasn't going to be a 10 or 15 takedown attempt type fight for Frankie Edgar. Mm-hmm. And so when Brian Ortega, you know, he's plus 1,300 as a prop to win by knockout, and nobody wanted to touch it. And because they all thought, oh, maybe he'll submit Frankie, probably won't outpoint the guy. But not a lot of people are maybe understanding what Ortega can do with some limited opportunities on the feet. And now taking out two very durable guys in Clay Guida and Frankie Edgar, largely on the feet. So I'm excited to see the Holloway fight. And again, that's as big a fight at featherweight as we can put together. And maybe not as big as Edgar Holloway, but in terms of the hardcore fans, I think that's the fight. Two guys with big frames for the featherweight division. I can't wait to see that fight play out. And we'll see if T-City's ready or not. I think it's going to be pretty close on paper. I don't think Holloway's going to be much more than a minus 180 favorite, especially given the nature of the Edgar result for Brian T-City Ortega. Sean O'Malley, Andre Sukumtok, Kenny, a very interesting fight here. You might have seen some video of your boy Rashad Evans talking about Andre Sukumtok, his teammate, not forcing Sean O'Malley to get back to his feet when he injured his leg. I see upside in both of these guys. I see a higher ceiling for Sean O'Malley, but fight IQ for Sukumtok has to be questioned here when potentially all he would have had to do is back up and it might have been a doctor coming in to give him a win.
Without a doubt. First, a couple things. Let's talk about the start of the fight for Andre. And I know Andre, and I felt bad for him. But, you know, if I'm looking at it with just critical eyes, not on Andre, but on his approach, when you're fighting a taller guy with a lot of offense, you absolutely cannot allow him to back you up. You can't. If you're going to counter, if you're going to be the counter guy, you can do it as Sean O'Malley. You can't do it as Sukumtok. Sukumtok should have been backing him up, should have been moving forward against the taller, rangier fighter. You cannot allow him to back you up as the shorter guy with less range. You just cannot. And O'Malley was just letting his offense flow from there, which really put Sukumtok behind the eight ball there. So not a good start for Andre. And every time he went forward, he was effective. Now, let's talk about the injury, all right? So, Anik, if you have me on one leg and I broke my foot or I have injured my foot at this point, I don't know if it was confirmed as broken, but I can't step, right? I got one leg. I guarantee you'll finish me. But you're not going to do it by taking me down. I mean, if you take him down, you're going, you know what? Let me help you win the fight. Let me help you survive. Why wouldn't you just try to knock him out on the feet? Why wouldn't you actually – he would have had a better chance if he put his arms up and waited for O'Malley to take one step forward. You know what I mean? It was crazy.
You could have kicked that. Kenny Florian, with all due respect, Kenny was a killer, okay? he would fight – I mean, not that you would fight emotional, but you would fight anger. I'm not saying you would have, grabbed the foot to force him.
I wouldn't have taken it easy on him. I'll tell you that.
You could have forced a verbal tap potentially just by grabbing the foot.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, I would have done it. I would have done it. It's fair. He's in a fight. Sorry.
Right. No. So obviously that was sort of the big storyline in that fight. But I do think O'Malley has a lot of weapons on the feet, Kenny. You know, distance management is as important for a striker than anyone. And I think he understands that pretty well. He's got a very feint heavy attack that has some polish to it, Kenny. I mean, this is a guy who has dreamed of this since 12 or 13 years old. So even if he wasn't always doing the right things in training, he was still working towards this goal.
Yeah, man. Listen, he's got two things that just make him dangerous right off the bat. He's got he's 5'11", 135 pounds, okay? And number two, he's got confidence. So maybe he's not the most technical guy right now, but he believes in himself and he believes in his system of striking. So just those two things alone make him dangerous. But guess what? He's becoming more and more polished now. He's fainting his way in. Does he have work to do? No doubt about it, on the feet and on the ground. But just his range and his confidence level could potentially make him a great fighter down the line. So O'Malley has, you know, he's really improving. I thought Sukum Tot was going to win this fight. I thought Sukum Tot was going to pressure him. And again, it's easier said than done. Maybe Sukum Tot went out there and go, geez, this guy's huge. I can't find my way in. I don't know. But whatever it wasn't the right approach. And as a fighter, you're going to have these ups and downs. O'Malley may have gotten into his head a little bit. And this young kid, man, he's got a lot of confidence. Once he lets his offense flow, man, he's going to be a problem for a lot of guys in that division. So I wasn't a believer. Him getting the win, I thought, you know, he's a guy who people are going to have to watch out for. No doubt about it.
And again, stiffer challenges await, but this is a guy who's just getting going, and he is undefeated. 14 amateur fights to his credit as well. So a big win for Sean O'Malley. And we also shouldn't lose sight of the fact that he got a couple 10-8s in the first round. Even though the new rules are not in effect, it seems like scoring has sort of widely been accepted that, you know, you don't even need to largely dominate a guy to get a 10-8. And relative to other 10-9s, that first round was most certainly a 10-8 for Sean O'Malley. And in the end, with a couple 29-27s, perhaps that was what got him the win. I don't know. I get confused with all the mathematics, but I think that 10-8 on two scorecards ultimately was why he won the fight. So now let's get to the fight you want to see next. So I think there are a lot of different options for Sean O'Malley. We threw it out there to our Twitter followers at @AnnickFlorianPod. And I think some people, Kenny, really want to move this guy forward quicker than I would advise. They want him to have a ranked opponent, and I'm just not sure that would be the right way to develop this fighter. The UFC has been pretty good at properly developing guys from 35 through 70. So he is a bantamweight fighter, and I'm going to throw some names your way. Courtesy of our fine Twitter followers, you can tell me what you think of these guys. So Tom Duquesnoy, I think, makes a lot of sense.
That was the first guy on my mind. That's wild.
Well, yeah, let's start there. I don't know if he has a fight on the books, but, I mean, that would certainly be entertaining for the masses, I would think.
Now, why was that the first name on my mind? Because here's another striker who's exciting, who's going to come forward. Listen, I think there's holes in O'Malley's game when it comes to wrestling and on the being on the ground. But I think Duquesnoy is a guy you can rely on to go and try to keep it standing, who's going to try to be exciting. I think that's a guy who's ranked right about the same level, I think, experience-wise. I think that's a fight that makes a lot of sense. I think one or two of those guys, maybe both of them, could be a future contender in that division. But I think that's a fight that makes a lot of sense based on what they've done in the UFC so far. And their styles.
Some other names that were thrown out there. Yair Rodriguez, it is a different division. I can understand the appeal for that fight, but that's not going to happen anytime soon. No. Yuri Alcantara, Eddie Wineland, Henan Barrow, Taruto Ishihara, Jose Quinones. A lot of good options there, but the one that I like is Thomas Almeida. And again, you're still talking about maybe a ranked guy. I don't know if Almeida has fallen so far that he has fallen out of the rankings, but I mean, Almeida and Sean O'Malley, I don't know if he's ready, but I'd sure like to find the hell out.
Right. I mean, that'd be an exciting fight, no doubt about that. But, yeah, slow your roll. Build up these guys. I think to some extent, you know, in some cases, I feel like the UFC has pushed some of these guys a little bit too much. I think they need to slow it down a little bit. Yes, we want to have these guys that are marketable and all that stuff, but just give them the right fights. Slow it down. And I think Almeida might be a couple steps ahead of the game there, as far as experience, certainly.
Right.
I think a guy like Duquesnoy makes a little bit more sense.
Yeah. And again, you're talking about credential, Eddie Wineland, Yuri Alcantara, Henan Barrow. These are big names with a lot of experience.
Yes.
I just don't know that Henan Barrow is going to be the name on the next contract for Sean O'Malley. But nonetheless, it's going to be a big fight. And, of course, he couldn't have done much more to maximize the pay-per-view showcase this weekend.
Yep.
So the sugar show's in full effect. He's getting his own marijuana strand, Ken Flo, by the way. The Montana kid. Yeah, I guess he's going to California and he's getting his own, like, sugar show strand. You know, he was talking about, like, wanting a sativa, pretty specific. So no out-of-competition drug testing for marijuana. All right, so I just want to put a bow on some things UFC 222-wise, Ken Flo. CB Dolloway and Hector Lombard. In terms of the main event challenge, I mean, do you understand that was a 3-point swing against you, that our guest picker last week had CB as an underdog and you had Lombard? So I don't know if that changes your opinion.
Dude.
It's interesting because I just felt like Horn was really loud and not the loudest arena, and maybe there was time. But for me to sit here as a non-fighter and say that Lombard could have interrupted that combination is really not going to win me any fans and is really not all that fair for me to do. And on Dolloway's side, what was interesting, and I wasn't necessarily going to say this on the broadcast, but I'm not going to start questioning how injured or not CB Dolloway is or whether or not that was a concussive blow. But it seemed to me that right after the combination, CB actually had recovered pretty quickly enough to mouth that was after the horn.
Right.
And then he started saying repeatedly what happened, so maybe things got foggy thereafter. But yeah. You also have to understand that CB Dolloway is paid $46,000 to show up and another $46,000 to win. And it wasn't going to behoove him – it was not going to behoove him to continue in this fight, Kenny, after that combination, legal or otherwise, illegal or otherwise.
46
right?
Gs. 46 Gs will change your mind a little bit. You know what I mean? So yeah.
And
but
I'm not
saying that's the case. But, right. Again, you were there, and I think that's an interesting observation that he said that immediately after. Hey, that was after the bell. I didn't see that. You guys Fox caught right to commercial right after that,
right.
Which I'm sure they had planned. And I saw him get dropped. I said, oh, no, this is not good. I don't know if this fight is going to continue because he looked like he was hurt. The fact that he said that is interesting. But, yeah, you never know. Maybe those effects kind of take place a little bit later. Maybe you still feel like you're rocked and you think you're okay, but you're not. It's unfortunate, man. Did our guest picker, is that how we picked the fight, John? Disqualification after the first round?
Well, hey, I mean, a W is a W.
You're
going
to do that
does
to the flow? That is ridiculous.
Hey, if it gets appealed and overturn to a no contest, remind me, and we will be sure to adjust the standings accordingly. But it's almost like if you
I'm just upset because I lost again, and I'm down so bad on points.
Well, dude, no, you had Cyborg by first-round knockout.
Yeah,
you had a pretty good week. You had another underdog play in there. You had Brian T. City Ortega as the underdog, Ken Flo. You picked him.
Oh,
Do you remember that, by the way?
I know. So
all is not lost. But, right. But you know, the thing about changing our standings, too, digressing a little bit here, but if you bet on CB Dolloway, you're cashing that ticket, right? Though it's asking for
no
the money
doubt
back,
about
you know?
It.
And if you hold
no
on to a and if you hold on to a straight wager on Hector Lombard, I don't know that you're getting your money back if and when that thing gets overturned to a no contest. And I don't think that's necessarily what's going to happen. You know, they had the benefit of replay, and that worked against Hector in this situation. And I don't mean to add further speculation to Dolloway or the extent to which he was hurt. I mean, I love the guy, 19th UFC appearance. He deserves the benefit of the doubt. But again, you know, sometimes you're a fighter. He's like, man, it doesn't make sense for me to continue. And all I have to do really is say what just happened to get 46K added to my paycheck and a DQ win. There's obviously some risk involved there, Kenny, right? I mean, it could have been a no contest, or he doesn't know exactly how they're going to do that. But Lombard gets DQ'd, and there you go.
You know, and here's the issue. You know, we were talking about earlier is that, you know, for this fight, we'd like to see some consistency here. You know, we've seen other shots that were late before with no repercussions. So we have to figure it out. You know, what would have happened if Holly Holm wasn't able to continue against Durandamy? You know, so we just have to be consistent in how we call these fights and how we call these situations that happen in the octagon. And that's going to get rid of a lot of the controversy. I think it's more just not knowing how a referee or how things are going to be called in there. So I think that's what's causing the issue.
And would you agree that as commentators, we're in a little bit of a tough situation because
we do
fuel the public perception, right?
So
commentators, and again, we are trying to call it as we see it in real time.
Well,
but
it was after the bell.
Right.
You know what I mean?
But
so
I'm
you called it right.
But let's say our narrative is, man, I don't know, that was pretty close, seemed like, you know, a borderline combination. Then sometimes the public narrative becomes that.
Sure.
And Lombard in the court of public opinion is dealing with a very different story when he gets out of that fight and gets to the post-fight press conference.
Yep.
So it's always a tricky situation for us. We're just trying to call it like we see it. And there is no agenda for any of these fighters. All right, going to toss a couple other names your way. Andre Arlovsky defeats Stefan Struve, and for the second straight fight, Arlovsky, coming up on 40, sticks to the game plan and gets it done. He had more takedowns, Kenny, in this fight than in his previous 24 UFC appearances combined. just an insane number there. Ketlin Vieta spoiling the return of Kat Zingano. That's a future star potentially. I really feel like she is just getting going. Mackenzie Dern, Alexander Hernandez, dude, we're running out of time. Cody Stamann, Mike Pyle's last fight against Zach Otto. Let's start with Ketlin Vieta. Can you just give me a couple things on her? Because Kat Zingano, even though she had been off for a while, and even though maybe her fighting prime, I don't know. I hate to say when or where it is, but for Ketlin Vieta, man, just like Kat Zingano's an intimidating fighter to fight, and Ketlin was the furthest thing from intimidated. Great coach, great skills, developing contender. I think eventually Ketlin's going to find her way to a UFC title fight. I really do.
Ketlin Vieira, she's from the Amazons in Brazil. Just they produce a lot of tough people, man. Jacare Souza being one of them. And when she was getting hit with some big shots against Zingano, nothing. I mean, her face never changed. She just kept plodding forward. Those counter takedowns were just lovely. My goodness, just sent Zingano flying. And if there was one aspect of the fight where a lot of people thought Zingano would have the advantage, it'd be with her strength. It would be with her takedowns. Not the case. And when she was getting tossed around, I said, this fight is absolutely over. Zingano, who physically is an imposing fighter, has some gifts strength-wise. She's aggressive. But technically, she just hasn't developed like I would have liked. And she's dangerous in the clinch with those knees. And that's about it. Vieira was just all over her. And it was tough to see Zingano get the loss there. She's a great person. But Vieira, just too skilled.
Yeah, I think it's three straight losses now for Alpha Kat Zingano. And after the judges in Orlando, by the way, had a great night across the board, there was nothing controversial about the scorecards in Orlando. This was not a great night for the judges. The fact that Kat Zingano won this fight, Kenny, on one judge's scorecard is
scary.
Insane.
Yeah.
Mackenzie Dern and Ashley Yoder, Kenny, I thought was a closer fight. I don't have an issue with someone giving this fight to Ashley Yoder, but I got to bring it up with you because you're the foremost jiu-jitsu guy I know. As part of my prep for this fight, I watched Mackenzie Dern beat Gabby Garcia in a jiu-jitsu competition, giving up north of 100 pounds.
Yeah.
The first thing I'll say, I'll pay $200 a ticket. The next time Mackenzie Dern and Gabby Garcia want to grapple, I'll fly. I mean, I don't know if I'll fly to Abu Dhabi, but I'm going to go live.
Right.
Like, that was an amazing video to watch, and Dern outpointed Gabby Garcia. Dude, like,
it's crazy.
This chick has got a fire and an ability to rise to the occasion, not unlike Sean O'Malley. I think she's a big-game player. And again, even though there are holes, man, I'm telling you, well, I shouldn't be telling you anything about this, but, dude, she's going to submit a lot of people.
Yeah, she is. She is. And, you know, I was impressed with the fact that she was able to eat some shots, deal with a very stubborn Ashley Yoder.
Yeah,
and you know what I mean? And continue to press forward and look for that submission. She was really looking for it in the end of that third round. She was all over Ashley in the third. I thought Mackenzie won the first. I thought Ashley won the second. And then I thought Mackenzie won the third. So I had a 2-1 for Mackenzie. But, yeah, absolutely, we got to praise Ashley Yoder for having some stingy takedown defense, being able to use her range really well in the second round. If she avoided that third-round takedown, she was going to win that fight, I thought. But it was just that the positional advantages for Mackenzie and just beating her up on the ground, that was the difference in that third round. She didn't get that takedown. I think Ashley was going to win that fight. So very impressed with Ashley and how she was able to, you know, use her strategy for the majority of that fight. But this is a great scenario. As I was watching this fight, I said to my buddy Kenneth Capello, I said, listen, if Mackenzie loses this fight or she wins this fight, either way, she's going to learn a lot from this. And the best scenario is always to make some mistakes, you know, deal with some struggles, and still get the win. Because she's going to realize she needs to clean up her striking. She needs to move that head a lot better. But she's tough, man. She's not afraid to throw down. A lot of jiu-jitsu practitioners are afraid to get hit. I don't think Mackenzie was afraid to get hit there.
And again, she was fighting a southpaw, which brought her to the brink of tears at times in training because it was very difficult there, switching up in terms of what she was trying to do on the feet. But yeah, no, I think you put it all perfectly. And as far as Ashley Yoder's concerned, she's 0-3 in the UFC, but tough matchups. I think she's going to get another fight to prove her worth there at 115 pounds. This is definitely the division in which Mackenzie Dern needs to make a run. I know there have been some weight cutting issues, but maybe there's a little bit of weight to trim there. But I don't like her at flyweight. I like her very much at strawweight.
Without
and she might like jiu-jitsu more than you, Kenny. Like, she wants to win the UFC title, defend it, and then go back and compete in jiu-jitsu. And as much as I like watching her fight in MMA, I think she might make me a fan of, like, watching Brazilian jiu-jitsu.
Well, she's exciting. I mean, she's a practitioner that really goes for the submission, you know, and a lot of, you know, of the world class, a lot of the champions in the jiu-jitsu world, they play for points, they get an advantage, they get a couple points here and there, and that they're satisfied. Mackenzie Dern, she's always been that practitioner who looks for the submission from the beginning of that fight. So that's what I like about Mackenzie, and that's why she's so kind of beloved by a lot of the jiu-jitsu practitioners.
All right, we got about 2 minutes. Alexander Hernandez, a 42-second knockout of Benil Dariush, who was the number 12 ranked lightweight in the world. Of course, this was supposed to be Bobby Green, and Dariush just told me he worked so hard that he wanted to stay on this fight card. Obviously, there was some risk involved here. Your reaction tells me you certainly saw this fight. How about the frame, the chiseled frame on this Hernandez, and then to go out and do that to Benil Dariush? Like, that's as good a UFC debut at 155 pounds as I think I've ever seen.
Yeah, and he did it against Dariush. I mean, Dariush is a stud on the mat. He's a good striker with some good experience. Hernandez, I mean, the first second of that fight, you showed he was going to give no respect to Dariush. He was out there to not win, but to destroy Dariush. And for a lot of guys making their debut, they kind of want to just go out there and prove that they belong. This guy wanted to go out there and prove that he's a name to watch. And I was really impressed with his approach. He went out there to kill. He was an absolute assassin. And then the way he handled the mic with you after. I mean, it seemed like he was like, yeah, this was going to happen. This is what I envisioned. I'm glad I got this result. I wanted to prove what kind of fighter I am. And, man, this is a confident and dangerous dude. My goodness. Slipping his head off on the center line and throwing that cross right down the middle. The kid did his homework. I'm excited to see his next fight. I know TJ Dillashaw, one of his heroes, he was switching his stances like TJ.
Right.
Pretty cool, man. These are the guys that these older generational fighters have to worry about.
No doubt, man. And athletically very gifted, obviously. And when I spoke to him Tuesday on the phone, dude, he was like, oh, this is a terrible matchup for Benil. Like, Benil, he tried to say it with all due respect. He's like, he's like, hey, man, I'm trying to be humble, but, I mean, these guys much slower than me. Like, I move like a 35, or I hit like a 70, or I was training for a fight on Sunday. I'm in the shape of my life. Like, I don't know what you guys think is going to happen, but, like,
yikes.
Plus 300, you may want to go to the window because I'm about to starch this kid. And then he went out and did all of that, and it only took him 42 ticks on the clock. So a nice win for Alexander Hernandez. Zach Otto with a win over Mike Pyle. Obviously, we all appreciate the 42-year-old Mike Pyle stepping away after 42 professional fights. Cody Stamann, spoiling the return of Brian Caraway. Stamann now a contender in the bantamweight division. And John Dodson, a little bit limited with what he was doing on the feet in terms of the weapons, Kenny. But he did enough to beat Pedro Munhoz. I just would like to see more from Dodson. He has never been finished in 30 pro fights, and I think sometimes that speaks as much to his style and his unwillingness to take risks as it does to his masterful footwork and speed.
Two things. I had it Munhoz 2-1.
Okay,
I thought Munhoz was going to win because of that very reason that you talked about. I didn't think Dodson was busy enough. Now, here's the problem. Dodson, that was his last fight on his contract. And if you're trying to prove to the organization that you want to get re-signed and get re-signed for more money, is that the way you want to fight?
Right. No, fair enough. And that was the last fight on his contract. Yeah. All right, 30 seconds on Chris Cyborg, Amanda Nunes, because we got to at least mention it. I know Megan Anderson went on Twitter and tried to sort of inject her name into this conversation. And it doesn't seem like the Pennington-Nunes fight has been put to paper necessarily yet, Kenny. Mm-hmm. How ready is Amanda Nunes to move up to featherweight, you know, by July to be game against Chris Cyborg? And where is your level of enthusiasm for Cyborg versus Nunes?
For me, aside from the Rose Namajunas and Joanna Jędrzejczyk, I think this is the biggest and best female fight you can put together in the UFC, period.
Yep.
Nunes-Cyborg, I think it's a fight that needs to happen. You know, I tweeted that. I had a bunch of tweets going, what are you talking about? Are you going to send her against another 135-pounder? Guess what? She's the best fighter available.
And
period.
She's not just
in the
another
world.
35-pounder.
Exactly.
I mean, she's Amanda Nunes.
She's Amanda Nunes. She's big for the division. I don't care. It's not about that. Let's say I'm trying to think of an example. There's other 125-pounders in there for Demetrius Johnson, but you got to get the biggest and best fight, which would be TJ Dillashaw. He's the biggest challenge to Demetrius Johnson.
Right.
So it's not about just getting, why does she fight another 145-pounder? Is there another 145-pounder on this planet right now that you think could beat Cyborg? Absolutely not. There's one who I think could. Unfortunately, she's 135 pounds. That's Amanda Nunes. She's the only person who hits with that kind of power. She has. She's not a small 135-pounder. It's tough for her to get down to 135 pounds. She should probably be fighting at 145 pounds at 140 anyway. So she has the striking. Right. She's a Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt. She has the size. Why not?
Right.
I mean, Megan Anderson, I think that's a fight that's going to happen at some point. Is she fighting UFC-level competition right now? Does she have the experience and the skill of an Amanda Nunes? I don't think so. Not right now. Is she big for 145 pounds? Absolutely. And I think it's a fight that has to happen. But I think right now with the UFC, in this case, you got to strike where the iron's hot, and that fight means Nunes and Cyborg.
Yeah, no, I agree with all of that. And for Megan Anderson, she's won her last four. She hasn't fought in 14 months, right? Certainly has some size. I haven't watched enough film to know enough about her footwork. Like Cyborg said to us when we asked her about Yana, she's like, oh, yeah, she's, you know, just doesn't have the footwork of someone like Holly, you know. And as soon as Cyborg said that, like when you ask Cyborg competitively about the fight against Kunitskaya, she was trying to be respectful, but she was just like, oh, from a footwork standpoint, like this is just very – this is very rudimentary for me.
To that point, I want to give credit to Jason Perillo, a guy who I had to fight against when I fought BJ Penn, because Perillo has really improved Cyborg. You had Cyborg, who was just physically was always going to be superior basically to anyone in that division. But now Perillo has turned her into a technician. You look at that fight against Holly Holm. She was the more calm and composed fighter. She looked like the pro boxer. Holly Holm looked like the less experienced boxer.
Yep.
So for Perillo to be able to calm Cyborg down and to let her pick her shots and, you know, to get more composed as a fighter, to get more refined and put that polish on her, that was the missing ingredient that Cyborg needed. And I think, you know, they're just very few that are going to understand footwork and angles like Cyborg now because of the training of Jason Perillo, in my opinion.
Yeah, my 2017 Anik and Florian Podcast Award winner of the Robert Follis Cornerman of the Year, Jason Perillo. He's worked wonders with not just Chris, but Bisping, Rafael Dos Anjos.
Yep.
And I'm glad you mentioned Nunes as a big bantamweight, because as you were talking before you said it, I wrote down, like, you think Amanda Nunes likes cutting to 135 pounds? Like, she wants this Cyborg fight, not just because it's a massive payday, because she thinks she can beat her, and she wants the biggest fights,
I think she's probably the only female on the planet who can.
Yeah. It's just tricky because we do have May in Rio de Janeiro, right? And I would almost guarantee you that if Amanda Nunes – I know it's a quick turn for Cyborg, who would like to fight in July, but I can almost guarantee you for Amanda Nunes, if she's going to fight Chris for the UFC women's featherweight title, she would like the time to get to July to put on some muscle mass and physically try to put herself in the best position.
July fight week.
I think it makes some sense, but no headliner yet in Rio, so we'll see how it all plays out. All right, good stuff today as we tried to help immortalize our man Bruce Connell and recap UFC 222. Thank you to our guests Brian Stan, Ray Longo, Anthony Giordano. Next week's show, as we mentioned, going to be Wednesday, March 14. We'll preview UFC Fight Night, Verdum versus Volkov. And then we're also going to begin our three-week look at UFC 223, Ferguson versus Khabib. When we get a big fight like this, we're going to spend three or four shows on it, at least in some capacity. So tune in for that next week. Thank you for listening and indulging us a little bit when it comes to our dear friend Bruce Connell. With that, for Ken Flo and the entire Fox Sports crew, John Anik saying so long for this week. Thank you all for listening, subscribing, all that good stuff. We'll talk to you in 8 days or so. Until then, stay healthy. Brucey, we love you. Yo, later.
The John Anik and Kenny Florian Podcast.
Sports betting is sweeping across the country faster than the coronavirus, and Wagering Week is your antidote. I'm Tom Barton, and I'm a veteran sports analyst and respected sports handicapper who helped build ESPN's brand. I've been recognized and awarded by Pro Football Weekly and Gaming Today magazine as the honest handicapper. Let the other guys give you the same old boring sports talk with the same tired storylines. We'll give it to you straight here every Friday on Wagering Week. Don't gamble with other podcasts. Let Sports Garden Network's Wagering Week help your bottom line.